We're doing the Sefer Amidot. We are up to page Reish Chaf Zayin. Amar kvar amarnu lefanecha ki ahava nima azot lo tavo lishkon kvod beveitcha ki machar asher pinita abayit v'tiyarta oto mikol avlei machmadei olam hazeh. We had discussed last time. We're attempting to reach a point where our desires, where our senses are working in harmony with our intellectual conclusions, where our connection to Hashem motivates us, where our connection to Hashem suffuses our being, and what we do is naturally in line with our intellectual connection to Hashem, and that is what we call the development of the love of Hashem, the development of the fear of Hashem. But we've already explained that in order to attain that, one must first clean out the house. One must first purify one's house. One must first purify oneself internally from the foolish desires of this world. It is only then that the light and glory of the love of Hashem can shine, and the honor of that love will be seen upon a person. And when one has those moments when his desires get the better of him, one has to know, and this is another, it's really a whole philosophy that he's saying in one sentence. He says, when you have those moments where desire is testing a person, and a person decides to go that route. And we have to know, we always make that decision. It's not like, oh, my anger got the better of me. No. You sensed anger within yourself. You had a moment's reflection and you made the decision to let go. There is that moment where a person decides to let go. It's true that after that, his mouth might run like water, and 2 minutes later he'll ask himself, hey, what did I just say? Maybe I shouldn't have said all of that.
So anger is, by definition, against Torah? Is an action against Torah? Anger always will bring us to Mechalel.
I'll tell you, the word always is a big word that I don't like to use. I would say I always don't use it, but I don't like to use it. So I don't know. I'm not smart enough to answer about always. But generally, the Talmud tells us, kol ha-ko'es, and that does seem to use the word always. But you see, even when the Talmud uses the word always, the Talmud says, en nemedin min ha-klalot, that the word kol is not as encompassing as you think it is. But at any rate, the Talmud does say, kol ha-ko'esim chachamu chochmatom istalektim naviu nevuatom istalektim adamu da'atom istaleket. The Talmud does seem to indicate that anger has negative impacts on a person. But at any rate, so the Ma'in Midovna says, there's that moment when one's desires are overtaking him, and then he makes a choice. Am I going to bring it up or am I going to put it down? And when a person decides to bring it up, and he decides to approach it with a warm countenance, welcome in. And we all know those moments. We know that moment when we wake up and see the alarm clock and say, I'm going to sleep. We know that moment when we have a juicy piece of Lashon Hara and we decide, I'm going to say it. And there are those moments when we decide to embrace what we know we really shouldn't. Uvesimcha panav techadeyu, you will greet him warmly with happiness. But we have to realize that we are making two choices at that time. We think we're making one, but we're not. We're making two. We're making a choice to go down the wrong road. And when you go down the wrong road, you're not only advancing in the wrong direction, you're distancing yourself from the right direction. And so, when a person makes that choice, we have to know that in life, you're either close to Hashem or distant from Hashem. You're either developing the love of Hashem or you're walking away from it. You're not standing status quo. So it's not just the decision to go down the wrong road, it's a distance to the decision to walk away from the right road. And that, says the Magen Midovna, you're not only adopting, you're not only going down the road of desire, you're also turning your back on the love of Hashem, and you will find yourself descending. You have taken your enemy and given him strength. Yes?
So by doing so, we can try ourselves in order to... It's like a shot, you know, like a full shot, you know, like you're already like kind of... and again, you're already kind of protected against it. So can we say that sometimes when we go down the wrong road, we do it because we want to pick something and maybe there is a way to turn back, like...
We should turn back, but we shouldn't go down that road. That's a lie. Yeah, we always have good, pious reasons why we go down the wrong road.
No, because it seems that sometimes it might help on the things that need to be fixed on the right side.
They might. We don't do that, no.
I know.
No. There are always very good reasons to do the very wrong thing. And they're obviously wrong. So... Again, the Magen Midovna says, you want to attain this love, it doesn't come easy, but it's in order to attain it, you have to uproot, you have to take out the weeds that are there in one's heart. And a person has to be diligent, he has to maintain a watch, like someone who is out the lookout, how do you call it? The guy who's watching out. The lookout. Pentachat misibot mitapchot yavoy lecha yetzer b'chelik sfatav. Because, you know, there are always those cunning ways in which the yetzer can slide back in. And he tries to defile that slither of oil that's burning in one's heart. He tries to defile it and tries to darken what's in the heart. And this is another important point, that we have to know that there does not exist a moment where a person can say, ah, I'm pure, I've made it, that's it, I'm never going to fall again. Mi yomar zikiti libi, King Solomon said, who's the man who could say, I've purified my heart, I'm okay, I got nothing to worry about? No, we always have what to worry about. So it's not enough that we've grown, we also have to be careful to maintain that growth. And I said to someone earlier tonight that one of the greatest accomplishments is consistency. It's not only about growth, it's also about maintaining that growth. A lot of people have gone on diets and lost a lot of weight only to regain it. People have conquered their habits only to fall prey to them again. The greatness is in consistency. It's not only in attaining it, it's in holding on to it. Yeah?
Interesting, you're talking about diet. It's actually been shown scientifically that, especially when it comes to things like alcohol, food, anything that's physical, once you actually create a circuit in the brain becomes almost hardwired. And so you're talking about uprooting it. But it's literally a physical, chemical addiction to what you're, which is why people go gain the weight they lose, which is why people have such trouble stopping smoking or drinking or anything that has to do with physicality in this world. You become hardwired, though. So how do you improve that? You're trying to change a physical, chemical within the body.
So we said he gave us certain pieces of advice. Few chapters ago, he said some things. He said some of the things I said, so I don't remember exactly, so I don't want to say it in his name, but what we discussed is the number one rule, and this becomes before everything else, is you have to really decide that you want to go the other way. Meaning most of the time we don't come to a real decision. We come to a certain intellectual recognition. Maybe we feel a certain conscience that we should be trying. Maybe we're uncomfortable walking outside looking the way we do. So we come to a certain quasi-decision. No. You have to come to a real decision. This is what I want. This is important to me, and I will conquer it. and that's easier said than done. But after that, the other steps they're natural. So he said, you take steps that are against it, meaning we gave the example: you take a cigarette and you break it. You do actions that are counter that. We also discussed that you nip it at the bud. You try to find out what leads me there. I'll tell you an interesting thing. I grew up, my father smokes. I grew up with smoking. And my mother always used to tell us how it stank. And my mother always used to say, it gives me a headache. And my mother insisted that my father only smoked out of the house. So none of us ended up smoking. Me or any of my brothers, none of us smoked. Okay. About 4 years ago, not exactly 4 years ago, I had two good friends who smoked. One, I'd accompany walking every morning and afternoon to the other yeshiva I teach in, to the Hesder yeshiva. We'd take the same bus together to the yeshiva and the same bus back. And he would smoke a cigarette from the bus stop to the yeshiva and from the yeshiva back to the bus stop. And at the same time, we had a student here at the Mahon who was a smoker, who was a steady that he would walk me home at night. And he would smoke on the way home at night. And for the first time in my life, I found myself wanting to smoke. Now, all I was getting was secondhand smoke, and you'd think, I grew up on secondhand smoke. Why does that matter to me? I don't know. I don't know how to explain it. I was fortunate that my wife told me that the day I smoke, I shouldn't walk in the house. So I was very lucky because it was shocking to me that suddenly I have a temptation to smoke. You know, never happened before. Yeah, me. You probably remember who the student was. Oh, whatever. 4 years ago. No. So one of the things I realized was, where is this coming from? I'm smelling it, and I like the smell. I'd walk next to them, and I'd inhale. You know, not like Clinton. I would inhale. So I would tell, even though my friend, I liked talking to him, I learned a lot from our walks together, but I said, it's not worth it. So I would tell him that when he smokes, I want to walk ahead or walk behind, but we can't walk together. And the same thing with the student here. You have to find what's leading us there. You have a lot of people who say, I want to diet, and yet they go to the store and they buy the foods that shouldn't be around the house. I had a friend who told me he has a problem, he has a sweet tooth. So I said, I'm willing to talk to your wife about how to help you not get cavities. I told her, when he's not home one day, take all the sweets and take out half the bag. Put it in put it in another bag, store it. Don't throw it away yet. Take out, take all the sweets and take out an amount that he won't notice, but it's the most you can take out. And they put it away, and she put it away without his knowing. And sure enough, suddenly he looks in the bag and there are only 3 bars of chocolate left. He didn't remember that there used to be 6. And there are 3, so he thought about it. I said to her, you're allowed to eat, right? He doesn't mind if you eat sweets. So take that bag, and every day take one of this of each of the sweets and put it in that bag. You could have eaten it. You didn't need it. You put it in the bag. And don't go buying any more in the store. He doesn't have time to go to the store. She goes to the store. So suddenly he's running around the house looking for sweets, and he doesn't have sweets. So where is he going to get his sweets? So it worked because where was his problem? His problem was that it was readily available. And if you tell him, take all the sweets and throw them out, he's not ready to do that. But if you go around the bush and you say, okay, we're going to take half away without his noticing, and every day we'll take one of each. So after a week or two, there was nothing left to be had, and she wasn't buying anymore. She'd buy one pack of sweets.
He doesn't live in a bubble. Next time he's going to the supermarket, he's going to...
No, he wasn't the one who was going to the supermarkets. Okay, but you know, again, you made headway, right? But if you conquer 2 weeks, if you have 2-3 weeks of breaking that habit, so you've taken a lot of steps forward. Another thing I said is, what do you like munching on? You need to munch during that. What do you like munching on? Carrots, fine. So your kids have to know that when they come home in the afternoon, one of their jobs is, every kid has to peel 2 carrots. Get yourself these plastic containers, fill them with water, and you should always have a container in the fridge with a bunch of carrots. So when you're sitting next to the computer, when you're doing whatever you're doing, you pull out that box, and now start munching on carrots. And that's what happened. I'm not going to say he didn't go back to the habit. Either he did or he didn't. But he saw that he could conquer it. And he saw, where's the root of the habit? The root of the habit is because I have it in the house. I won't have it in the house. I need something to munch on. I'll start munching on carrots.
You can conquer it, but the thing is still there. The urge is still there. So that's what I'm saying.
Like, no. No, so that's what I'm saying. If you could, if you conquer the urge and you go for a period and you give yourself something else, so with time you overcome it.
Do you ever fully like change yourself to a point where like the famous examples of becoming an alcoholic who 40 years out of the being off the wagon, you know, he still can't make a lachaim even though 40 years off the wagon, you know, he still can't take a sip of alcohol, you know, that's what the coach would transforming yourself, or is it more that you just developed that you have a problem and you're minimalizing that problem by staying away from the, like, if what you're, I don't know which one you're saying, that you could transform yourself to the point where you could have a drink and not, you know, feel the gluttonous, you know, temptation to drink more, or do you always have that but you just sort of push it away?
I think it depends on how far a person was. Meaning, it depends on how far a person was. We try to reach a point where we could be normal, where we could be in the middle. I know people that, and I know a lot of people like this, and I don't even understand it. Certain Yetziraras, I understand. I have them too. There are certain Yetziraras that I don't even understand. Some people, if they have 3 tubs of ice cream in the fridge, in the freezer, they could eat 3 tubs of ice cream tonight. I can't, so I don't even have that Yetzirah. I don't even understand it. But then to such a person, I say, don't have 3 tubs in the freezer. You know that's your Yetzer Hara, right? If you're trying to control your weight or your sugar or something else, so take control. Now, I agree that there are situations like an alcoholic where a person knows, I can't, I have to stay away from this for life. Fine. But I think that in most areas, a person should conquer it. There are areas where he won't. The Talmud tells us that there are areas where a person has to spend his life away from it. Like you said, the Talmud says it with regards to promiscuity. That no one should think he's conquered it. The Talmud says it with regards to becoming an apostate. No one should think that he's such a religious Jew, he'll never turn his back on Judaism. No. You could be the most pious Jew for 70 years, and after 70 years, suddenly you say, I've had it. Someone called me up last night. True conversation. Someone calls me up and says, Rabbi, I've had it with this Judaism thing. So I said, okay. So they said, no, I'm not joking. About once a month, I get this feeling that I've had it with this Judaism thing. So I said, well, you're ahead of me. I get it more than once a month. So they said, no, you're a rabbi. You're just saying that to make me feel good. I said, no. There are mitzvos that are hard. There are times that are hard. There are times that a person looks at everything he's doing and says, this is really difficult. You know, I wish I had a way out. I say very often in class that I don't know, if I were born non-Jewish, I don't know if I'd have the courage and the clarity to make this choice. I know it's right, but I also know I have other desires, so I was born into it. It's pretty easy for me. You know, I grew up this way. Fine, but if I wasn't here, would I become a ger? I'd like to think I would, because it's the right thing to do. But I don't know if I would. There's a lot of fun things out there.
There is not a feeling of kfiya about those things when you want to turn back on Torah. It's like, it's not just giving up. It's that we know that's the right thing. We know that we should do it. Kfiya in the sense of, because we know and we just don't want, we want to be against it. That's why I'm using the word.
Yeah. Hashem created us that we want to be free. And the Torah is constricting. The truth is that the Torah gives us the greatest freedom because it gives us the freedom to realize life, to really live life. But there are many moments when you don't feel that way. Your neighbor's making money while your shop is closed on Shabbos, and he's stealing your customers while your shop is closed on Shabbos, and you don't have an answer for it. He's driving his Mercedes and you're riding your bike. So you look at him and you say, okay, so I'm doing what's right, but it doesn't always taste so good to be doing what's right. And when you're riding on your bicycle and suddenly your wife has to give birth and you don't have the means to bring her there, or there are all kinds of challenges that are a product of doing what's right, so then people have those moments, and it's a normal part of life where a person isn't so excited about being Jewish. Yeah, there's nothing wrong with it. Quite the contrary. When guys ask me if they're ready to date, one of the questions I ask them is, how many lows have you gone through? How many times did you wake up in the morning and you didn't want to keep Shabbos? And what did you do then? To my mind, that's the great gauge of a person's tshuva process. It's not that all the times you had a high, great. But did you have in the last 6 months that you didn't keep Shabbos because you were fed up? Well, then you know you haven't yet reached where you should be. I'm not saying that a person should take action when he doesn't feel like it. I'm just saying it's very normal that a person has mornings when he does not want to go and daven. Right now I'm not in the mood. I'd much rather stay in bed. You want to grow to a point where you don't have such mornings, where you realize the value of tefillah in your life, when it becomes such a part of you that you're waiting for the moment you could share your life with Hashem. But you don't get there so fast. And if it's not tefillah, then it's other areas. There are areas in life where you say, for one person, the Yetzer Hara is Shabbos. He can't imagine that he's going to have 24 hours where he's disconnected from the world. He has no idea what's happening. So that's his Yetzer Hara. For another person, it's being modest when he's on the internet. For a third person, it's talking respectfully to his parents. For a fourth person, it's eating kosher. Every person has their challenge and their realm of their Nisyonot. And there are times that we stand up to them and we're happy and we're proud, and there are times that we stand up to them and we get tired, and there's nothing wrong with that. But we have to know, as we discussed earlier, one of the greatest accomplishments is consistency. It's not only attaining a high, it's staying there. And sometimes we attain the greatest growth when we feel like we're not doing anything special. We're just holding on to where we got to. The plane is covering the most ground when you don't see it ascending. When you don't feel like it's moving, all the clouds look like they're just moving a little bit at a time, right? That's when you're covering the most ground in your flight. That's the way it is in yeshiva. You come into yeshiva, the first month is, oh, it's exciting, wow, look at that, so many new things. Second month, wow. By the third month, it's like, hey, wait a second, I've been there, I've done that. Another day just like that, yeah, okay, I'm getting tired. Third month, fourth month, just a second, the guys are waiting. Yeah.
Also be in that when you fall and you pick yourself back up and you continue to struggle, that kind of consistency, that you acknowledge that you're going to have those, but then you don't just throw the baby out with the bathwater.
Yes.
This is an ongoing thing. You're going to have to be consistent in renewing the struggle.
Right, but I think that there are two points, meaning point number one, sheva ipol tzadik vakam. A tzaddik is someone who repeatedly falls and repeatedly gets back up. 100%. And even David HaMelech, it says that David HaMelech was on the verge of becoming a pagan. More than once, we have stories in Tanakh where David HaMelech was ready to throw out everything. So I'm not the worst guy in the world. You guys probably heard this story from me. I dated a girl. And she asked me, where are you going to be in 10 years from now? And I said, I don't know. I have a Yetzer Hara every morning. So far I've been winning the battle, but I don't know what will be tomorrow. So she told me bye-bye. You know, I wasn't good enough for her. But I think my answer is very real. David HaMelech, it says, Ani amalti bechofzi kol adam kozev. We're going to say it in Hallel, next Shabbos, right? What does that mean? That means he's on top of the mountain. King Saul's men have surrounded the mountain. And he thinks he's a goner. He sees no way out. So he's standing there on top of the mountain and he goes, shucks, even Samuel the prophet was a liar. He told me I'm going to be a king. Where's my kingdom now? It's over. He looks down and he sees he's surrounded. He's finished. He had a minute where he doubted everyone, even the great prophet Shmuel who anointed him. Yeah, he had that minute. And Chazal tell us when his son Avshalom rebelled and he broke out with leprosy and the Sanhedrin turned their backs on him and most of Israel rebelled against him and he didn't know if he'd make it out alive, let alone with the kingdom. So then he had a moment where he left Judaism when he went up to serve an idol. And his Rebbe Irai Ya'iri met him as he was ascending the mountain and his Rebbe said to him, David, what you doing? And David said, well, I have no answer. How could this happen to me? And Irai Ya'iri says, What do you mean? You married a bad woman. Obviously, she had educated your son like this. So he said, what do you mean? I did what was right in marrying her. And Ira Yairi showed him, no, you did what was wrong. The Torah forewarns you. You're going to marry a woman who doesn't even want to be Jewish. So then you don't think you're doing a mitzvah. You're going to end up having a son who doesn't want to be Jewish. You're going to end up having a son who's going to want to kill you, which is exactly what's happening to you. Whoever told you to marry that girl who never wanted to be Jewish? David said, isn't it a mitzvah? Ira said, no, it's not a mitzvah. You did wrong, and now you're paying the bill. Ah, okay, fine. About face. He continues walking. He's still got leprosy. Everyone's still turning their back on him, but Ira Yairi grabbed him in the nick of time. But he was ready to turn his back on all of Judaism. So David HaMelech, yeah, David HaMelech, part of being great is that you have fools. But here we're discussing something which is slightly different, and that is that in the growth process, even though every graph that involves life is going to zigzag, but the question is how far down are the zigs? Yeah, you want to zig and zag, fine. That's part of living. But if it goes so far down that 1 week I'm keeping Shabbos, 2 months I'm keeping Shabbos, and then I have 2 weeks where I'm not, so you're right. Part of growth is that I can keep the upward graph and bounce out of it and start keeping Shabbos again. But then I have to know that I'm not yet ready to date. It's legitimate, it's fine, I have to overcome it, it's part of the tshuva process. People did not grow up keeping Shabbos, and it's a new thing, and maybe a person took too much on himself at one shot, but at the end of the day, it is a gauge that should tell me I'm not ready to date yet. So yeah, your point is 100% right. Part of being a tzaddik is that we get up, and part of continued growth is that we do get up and we don't throw out the baby with the bathwater. But it is still a gauge as to where I'm holding. Give me just 1 second. Did I answer you?
Me?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
I thought so. I just wanted to make sure you thought so.
No, you did.
Okay.
I don't know.
He is saying that you have to be diligent and know that there's always that threat of falling again. Meaning, he doesn't say, should you go to the extreme of Alcoholics Anonymous? I'm saying it depends on what. There are areas where, yes, like promiscuity, Jewish philosophy, you could say alcohol. There are areas where, yes, a person has to know that you can't open an opening because there's always room to fall there. And then there are areas where a person can say, I conquered that. You have a guy who wasn't an alcoholic, but he felt he was drinking too much, so he gets it under control. And then there's nothing wrong if he takes a drink at a kiddush. He sees himself, he gauges himself. But it's you're right, it's attaining a balance, like the Rambam writes. You have metal bent this way, you bend it the other way in order to get it to straighten out. But you want to be straight. At the end of the day, you want to attain equilibrium. There are areas where the only equilibrium you can have is to be diligent, to be vigilant in ensuring that you won't fall. Michael.
So my question is, nowadays there's a lot of different levels of observance that society is okay with, or whatever the Jewish people's okay with. But back then, there was only one level. If you broke Shabbos, you got killed. Did this, you got killed, you got stoned, you got whipped, whatever. I mean, there's no room for growing. You're either at that level or you're dead.
That's not accurate. That's not accurate. That's a theoretical view of Jewish history. What?
You're saying there were people that were not so, I mean, they kept kosher maybe, but they didn't keep all the last of Shabbos. You know what I mean?
Yeah. The Talmud tells us there were Amei Haaretz. The Amei Haaretz, the common folk, didn't know how to say Shema every morning, didn't know how to keep Shabbos, did not know how to keep kashrus the way they should. We have all the Masechet of Demai, which involves how they did not know how to take off their tithe and their Trumas Meiser. No, you have throughout the Shas situations where people, Chashudim Amei Haaretz ala Shviyas, the Amei Haaretz, it was known that they weren't careful in keeping Shemitah the way they should, and in the area of Shabbos as well. Whatever they knew, they kept, but there was a lot of ignorance and a lot of people who were not keeping all of the Torah.
Let's say you know. I mean, for example, I know that to keep kosher for the most part. Let's say that I have a tendency, maybe I'll keep kosher meat, but I'll eat that back in the time of the Mikdash?
Well, who would know what was going on in a person's own home? You know, people still lived in their own home. It was between a man and his creator. No one knows what a person's weaknesses are. Do we allow for it? What do you mean? We don't know. If a person's going to stand in front of us and do it, there are different stages in Jewish history, and there are different approaches to different people, meaning the Talmud also takes into account that there are people who grew up with certain norms, and even though those norms are wrong, we don't hold them accountable for it because they don't know any better. As the Rambam writes about the Shomronim, the Karaites, that the first generation Karaites, well, they were apostates. But when you hit the second and third generation, or you hit the generations of now, they don't know any better. They grew up thinking this is Judaism. Same thing we would say today about people who are Reform and conservative Jews. So some of them aren't Jewish altogether. But those of them who are Jewish, they don't know any better. What do you want from them? You know, they have people who have the title rabbi, and them we might have a serious issue with. But the common person, what do they know? You can't hold anything against them. Yes?
I just wanted to know about this guy who called you up. How old was he?
Why does that matter?
I was just interested.
Okay. Back to our Sefer Amidot. I changed so many details. So it really doesn't matter. If you wanted me to answer you, I would, but I wouldn't tell you the truth, so it doesn't matter.
What? What time is it?
No, I don't mind. If you want, I'll give you an answer, but if I'm making up so many other details of the story, I'd make up the age too. So what difference does it make? Right? That's what I say, right? I would never give accurate information that could identify a person.
I didn't know that I knew the person.
Right, you don't, but that doesn't matter. But the person watching it doesn't even know I'm talking about them.
You sure?
100%. I changed enough details.
Okay. He asked like a contrary question.
No, no.
Simple.
The question was accurate, but everything else wasn't. No. But you could never be careful enough. So whatever is not relevant, I make a point of changing. Meaning every part of the story that's not relevant, I change.
So he didn't call last night.
What?
He didn't call last night.
If I say it was last night, it was probably a week ago or a year ago. You know, whatever. This one happened to have been last night. Okay, back to our... that was a detail I didn't think to change. Okay, maybe. By the time this goes online, he won't know when last night was. Okay, back to the Sefer Amidot. So what did we see today? The Magen Midovna said, this pleasant love can only dwell in a person's heart when he purified his heart. We said that he's really giving us a whole philosophy about the fact that wrong choices are choices. We are not taken by the moment, but rather we make a choice to be taken by the moment. And secondly, he taught us that when you go in the wrong direction, you're not only advancing there, you're distancing yourself from what's right. And here, maybe I could quote something that a rabbi in Chappelle's once said. I don't know who. One of our students once quoted it to me in his name. He said, and I don't know if I would say it as strongly as he said it, but I'll tell you what he said. He said, every choice you face in life can be boiled down to the following question. Am I going to choose to come closer to Hashem or more distant from Hashem? When I'm faced with choices, if I really want to boil down the question, the question boils down to that. Sometimes we tell ourselves, well, there's A, B, C, and D that'll play themselves out this way. And there's X, Y, Z that'll play themselves out that way. But if you really want to take off all the facade, you can really boil it down to that.
The wrong way is one that will not lead it to Hashem. You have many people that they were religious all their life and they live their shkuna, they live all their levush, everything. And sometimes there are people from Eretz Tova and come back to Judaism and become chachamim. Meaning, that does mean that the way that we see that the sins that are distant ourselves from Hashem is really a path that will cut us from Torah and Judaism.
Okay. And then the Ma'amid Dovnet said that a person has to be vigilant to ensure that he maintains whatever he attained, because there's always different temptations that are lurking. And we'll pick up here, Bezrat Hashem, Friday.